Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Through both the prosperous and challenging economic cycles of agriculture, Farm Credit will support rural Illinois today and tomorrow.
From Western Grain Marketing in Macomb, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason for this Monday afternoon. It is the 12th day of June 2018. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. I'll tell you a little bit about my travels during the day today. We started out in Fairview and are in Macomb for the afternoon and then Beardstown tonight. Just quickly, the crops from Champaign through Peoria, Fairview into Western Illinois all look really good, and there's been rainfall almost every place, although I must admit just to the north of Macomb things looked drier than other spaces, and there was at least one lawn that was almost completely brown. That one surprised me, but otherwise crops look really good. This afternoon we'll also talk with Aaron Hager and Emerson Nafziger, an update on what they think crop conditions actually look like across the state. So stay with us for this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers finished up like in Chicago. July corn today down 10.5 cents at $3.67 at a quarter. September 376 and a quarter, 10 and a quarter lower. December on its settlement price down 9 3/4 at $3.88 and a quarter. And the March contract 9 1/4 lower at $3.97 3/4. Next year's May at $4.04. That finished down 9 cents. Soy complex bean futures 15.5 lower at $9.53 3/4. August at $9.59 down 15 3/4. November beans at $9.73 3/4. That's your new crop, down 16 cents. January at 981, 16 cents lower. The bean oil down 6 cents at $30.58. And the bean meal at $3.51.20, down $6.60. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract at 514.5, 5.5 lower. The hard red July at 534 3/4, down 3.5 cents. And live cattle futures finished the June down $1.37.5 at 108.65. Feeders at 145.95, down $1.32.5, and lean hogs at $80.15, up 27.5 cents. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what some of the rest of the numbers look like at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $66.14 a barrel, up 40 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.42 6/10. That's 2 1/10 lower. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.16, just about 0.4 cents lower. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB, a penny lower at $2.10 3/10. Natural gas at $2.94 3/10, up 5 3/10. The Dow Jones Industrials about 60 points higher, 25.367. U.S. dollar at 93.565 is up 0.028 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from meteorologist Andrew Pritchard for this evening. We should see a chance of thunderstorm continuing. A low of 67 degrees, northeast winds at about 5 miles an hour near Urbana-Champaign area. Tomorrow partly cloudy, a slight chance of a thunderstorm, and a high of 88 degrees and a southeast wind at 5 to 10. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy, a low of 68, northwest winds at 5, and for Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high of 87 degrees on a north wind at about 5 miles an hour. The National Weather Service says on Wednesday evening we'll have partly cloudy skies, a low of 64. Northeast winds at 6 miles an hour after midnight. Thursday, partly sunny, a high of 85. East-southeast winds at 6 to 8. And Thursday night, a chance of rainfall, again, mostly cloudy, a low of 67 degrees. Friday, chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1. Partly sunny and a high near 89 degrees. Friday evening, partly cloudy and 70. Saturday, 91 under mostly sunny skies.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason, traveling, of course, today with Western Grain Marketing and Rochag Marketing out on a grain elevator series. We're in Macomb at the moment and recording a bit early over the noon hour because of my travel schedule. Kurt Kimmel has graciously agreed to join us. Hey, Kurt, nice to talk with you today.
Oh, enjoyed it, Todd. Looks like it's going to be a fairly active week on many events, so...
It does. Hey, you know, one thing, I had the pleasure, still have the pleasure of traveling with your son, Logan, who is a recent University of Illinois grad and is working with Rochag Marketing out of Boca Raton. He's here traveling with John today and helping out with the marketing meetings. And those folks who want to know a little bit more about Logan can actually listen to him on our website at willag.org in the opening market report, a two-Kimmel day for me for the marketing. So kind of fun to be talking with your son today. I appreciate all that you've taught him. How about that?
Well, I guess it's old versus young here today, so we'll see how it comes out.
Okay, so, well, let's go with the old and see if there is wisdom in this, because, boy, do we have a busy week, and it's not starting out very pretty. Why is the market lower? Is this just the rainfall that we've had across Iowa, Illinois, the Eastern Corn Belt?
Well, we feel it's several events all coming together all at once. Overnight, felt kind of comfortable with the weekend rain, visiting with producers last night. Anywhere from 1 up to 5 inches across the central part of the Midwest in through here, and thought the market would be a little bit lower than it was last night on that news. But I think what happened was, as the day session came intact, that we saw some hedge pressure come in with producers receiving some rain, feel a little bit more comfortable pushing a little bit more out the door. Then also, too, we're still continuing to be concerned about world trade. We've not seen any new bean sales or new sales in general as a whole here come forward. And this is the typical time of year we start to see those sales being generated. But China is still holding off on U.S. Bean purchases. Also, too, there's talk that maybe NAFTA might not get squared away until we get into Labor Day down the road. So with the favorable weather and trade issues and export concerns in through here, I think we're seeing some liquidation take place. Tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., we're going to see the monthly supply-demand report, and I don't know if they're going to mess with yield a whole lot. The crop ratings are going to remain high, but the idea is that maybe they could bump corn yield up maybe a half a bushel. That yield on corn last month was 174 bushels to the acre. The average trade gas is about 174.2. Bean yield last month was 48.5. Ideas they could bump it up to 48.6. The crop was still relatively small. We still have a large part of the growing season in front of us yet, so that yield is going to be probably raised down the road here if this weather continues to be somewhat favorable. But ending stocks just a little bit tighter. Old crop corn maybe down 20 million bushels. Old crop bean carry out now maybe 5 to 7 million bushels. New crop corn expected to be about 1.642 versus 1.682 last month. New crop bean carry out 435 versus 415. That's going to be raised somewhat. But overall, world numbers expected to be just a tad bit lower. But the big thing is long term, when you look at 17-18 versus 18-19 ending stocks, as we go into this new crop production, there's fairly good drop from old crop to new crop on ending stocks, indicating that there's really a good demand base out there to be satisfied.
Is the trade expectation for this afternoon's weekly crop condition report for it to show good conditions across the Midwest, or will we begin to fall off at some point?
I think it's going to be somewhat stable. The rain did not come over the weekend until Sunday here for those dry areas that needed some. There's still a few problem spots, and it's going to vary. Talk to the guys in northern Iowa, Minnesota, they've been receiving too much rain. In fact, as we move down the road, we're going to start talking maybe a few more prevent plant acres, which would be moved into the harvested acre category. I don't know if it's a big, huge market factor, for say, but that's something to watch down the road. But overall, visiting with guys across the Midwest, the crop is in fairly good shape, and it's going to even look better here for those areas that were dry, did not have good soil moisture to work with. Receiving that moisture now, things are going to be beneficial here over at least the next 2-3 weeks.
You mentioned the Tuesday or tomorrow WASDE report numbers, and we'll have those on our website as soon as I can get to them, right around 11 o'clock. So visit willag.org, and you can see those numbers as soon as they come out at that point. However, I do have a question about the world numbers and the impact. You thought about a small change, not a big change, but a small change in ending stocks for new crop corn. I suppose some of that might come from what you think could be a change in the Brazilian corn production number. Are we expecting something in that particular line of the report?
Yeah, the average guess on Brazilian corn is 84 million metric tons. In May, we were at 87. That South America corn crop, even in Argentina, expected to be a little bit lower. We'll even see what the Chinese corn estimate. But the 17-18 carryout, the old corn carryout, the average guess is 193 million metric tons. As you move into this 18 production, it's expected to be about 157 million metric tons of world corn ending stocks. The significance of that is we were well over 200 million metric tons. So we're seeing quite a bit of a drawdown in the world supply demand balance sheet, particularly corn. And the optimism comes with the idea that, that China is going to move more to more ethanol, and also to their feed consumption. Short term is questionable, but longer term feed consumption worldwide is expected to be strong.
Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good.
And of course, Kurt Kimmel, he is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger now joins us. Emerson, I have a quick question for you based on the growing degree days. They piled up really quickly in the month of May. That was the warmest month of May we've had across the whole of the Corn Belt on record. This followed a really cool second coldest April on record. I'm wondering whether this has much of an effect on the crop. I know that it appears that at least in central Illinois, we may be silking by the end of June.
Well, it's almost certain we'll be silking by the end of June. We have a crop, and even though if you drive by it now, the canopy's been closing in pretty quickly on this crop. And it's going to close in even more quickly. I mean, the upright growth really gets into gear by the time the corn is about, thigh high to waist high. When it's as tall as your desk, then you can look for it to be adding those 3 inches, 4 inches a day until it starts to slow down close to tasseling then. But yeah, we're going to see the crop really pop now. But it's popped a lot more this year than it usually does. We haven't had any slowdowns in growing degree days, with the exception of a few cooler days this last week. But the unusual thing in May was we got most of our crop planted, of course, in the first week and 2 weeks of May, and then it's just been unrelieved high temperatures since then. We think that's probably positive as long as we have good rainfall. Last year, we remember the corn stayed very short, and we think that had to do with some drought stress. We'll call it drought stress. We didn't technically have drought in early June last year, but we had enough dry weather that it actually kind of limits the potential size of those or length of the corn stalk segments, that internode length. This year, we don't see any hint that that's going to happen, with the possible exception of some areas that just have been unlucky and missed the rainfall. That they can have that limitation there as well. But right now, warm temperatures during stem elongation, which is this phase we're currently entering now, typically means a little bit taller plant if we have the water to supply it. Water supply is going to remain our big challenge. The canopy color is really pretty good right now. When the corn grows rapidly like this, we see lots of new leaves coming out, and they're always pale when they first come out. And so, you know, the crop like this can tend to look not quite as dark green as it might have looked even a week ago because this very rapid leaf expansion now, and the average age of the leaf area out there is a little bit younger right now than it was a week or 10 days ago. But the moisture supply in the soil is going to be key. We haven't been using it very fast up until this point just because there's not as much leaf area out there, but it's going to, the more leaf area that gets added now in the next 2 weeks, the faster the water use is going to be, and we'll reach that maximum water use per day rate by late June. So we feel good about it so far, but also know that when our rain is coming mostly with these sort of thunderstorms, that means some people get it and some people don't, and that's going to be kind of the name of the game here, at least for the near future, it looks like.
If memory serves, when the corn grows so quickly, and you talked about it really moving fast with the GDDs piling up, green snap, because you mentioned thunderstorms, could be a problem. That might be something farmers would look at, I suppose. And then I'm wondering about a question I'm getting from a lot of farmers. They're a little concerned that soybeans have not popped in the same way that corn has come up.
I've seen that as well, that soybeans really haven't started their fast upright growth. With the exception, we have a planting date study here where we planted our first date on April 25th, and those are about a foot tall right now and about five leaves. That's pretty rapid growth. They just always have kind of a lag period, and with soybeans, they're kind of unpredictable. Sometimes they look pretty bad in the middle or even the end of June, and then it gets warm and we get rain, and then they really blossom forth. So they're kind of late bloomers a little bit in a way, and we think as long as they make enough growth by the end of July, they will be in good shape. So at this point, we're not too worried about that, but there's been a lot of herbicide dinging going on with soybeans. We see some of that for various herbicides. And I think part of it is with just less growth, the roots have a little bit more trouble getting down into where the best soil moisture is, and so it just takes them a little while to get started. We don't see the pale color that we would say, oh, they're not nodulating or they're not getting nitrogen. The soil supply of nitrogen has kicked in for any crop that's out there right now. And so we don't have too many concerns there. But I have seen that same thing with the soybeans, you know, staying fairly small. But if we remember back, they almost always grow like that. You know, April nothing made much growth in April, and we would have liked soybeans to come on and, you know, like corn does, but that nature of that crop just isn't that it does that.
Emerson Napsiger is an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Our extension weed scientist is Aaron Hager. He joins us as well. Aaron, there's been a lot of damage, and I think you've seen some of this across central Illinois in soybean fields. Farmers certainly have seen a lot of damage or injury, yellow top. What do we think this is caused from?
I think a lot of the actual foliar damage that we're seeing on soybeans more than likely is from one of the foliar applied PPO inhibiting herbicides. A lot of common practice now, since glyphosate is not effectively controlling species such as water hemp due to the evolution of resistance, is to include one of the foliar applied PPO inhibitors with the glyphosate to try to improve water hemp control. We've known for years these are more contact in nature. Typically, the amount of soybean response that we see from these foliar applied products really depends upon, number one, of course, the application rate, but also, number two, the conditions under which they were applied. A lot of the fields that we're seeing now demonstrating this severe leaf burn were more than likely sprayed probably around the Memorial Day weekend. We had very, very warm temperatures. It was very hot. We had probably a lot of very rapid herbicide uptake under those conditions. We've been moisture stressed in some parts of the state, especially through the central part of the state, which has more than likely slowed the soybeans' ability to recover from this damage. But typically, it takes at least around seven to 10 days before we see the soybean plants begin to recover. Maybe a little bit sooner than that if we had cooler conditions and more moisture in the soil. But we've seen this, of course, for years. Rarely have we ever seen any lasting effect of early season leaf burn in terms of reducing the yield by the end of the growing season. Again, assuming that we have somewhat good conditions for the soybean plants to recover.
This would be expected, even intended injury, I suppose, because producers, the chemical dealer, the applicator would know that there might be some injury that would show up. It's just worrisome because of the greater abundance of it. However, at that same point, over the Memorial Day weekend, a lot of spraying began with dicamba, and not all soybeans are capable of taking that on.
Well, we're anticipating we're going to see more response of dicamba-related injury symptoms on sensitive soybean here coming up within the next 10 to 14 days. A little field trip I took yesterday to the west side of the state, we did see some evidence of exposure that has taken place already. We generally assume that it's going to take anywhere from maybe 14 to 21 days after an exposure event has taken place on a sensitive soybean before we see symptoms actually develop in that field. So if you do the math on the calendar, probably again in another week to 2 weeks, we're going to start to see more evidence across the landscape of off-target exposure.
Of course, dicamba is now a cross-platform, I'll call that because I'm a techie and I like my computers, but relatively speaking, a cross-platform chemical can be used both on corn and soybeans. With the quick growth of the corn crop because of the higher heat, growing degree days piling up. Are there any problems that producers can expect, especially maybe as we have thunderstorms and other things roll through?
I think for the most part, based just simply on the size of the corn around most of the state, I think the vast majority of post products have already been applied on corn. We ran an article several days ago about the maximum either size, height or growth stage of corn for broadcast applications of many of the common post herbicides, and we're well beyond that time frame right now. So generally speaking, of course, around seeing things like growth regulators that are actually used in corn, most times if they're applied before corn exceeds about 5 or 6 inches, we rarely see much of a response. I guess one exception would be if we made that application and then within maybe 24 or 48 hours had a cold front come through with some high winds. Sometimes we'll see corn bent over, leaned over. More times than not, it generally within about a week recovers from that damage without any lasting effect.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Aaron Hager, of course, is an extension weed scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for more than 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National German Chocolate Day. It's also Feast Day of St. Barnabas, the patron saint of farmers. On this day in agricultural history in 1742, Benjamin Franklin invented the Franklin stove. The wood fuel burns on an iron surface over a cold air duct, which heats air, which then passes through baffles in the back wall. The heated air is released through vents on each side of the stove. He did not patent the stove so that others could freely copy the design. In 1842, Carl Paul Gottfried Lind was born. A German engineer, he invented mechanical refrigeration. He developed the technology so that beer could be brewed year-round. In 1939, President Franklin D. Roosevelt served hot dogs to King George VI and Queen Elizabeth of England during their visit to the U.S. It was the first time they had tried this American treat. And in 1947, sugar rationing ended in the U.S., at least for home use. In a surprise move, then USDA Secretary Clinton P. Anderson ended household and institutional sugar rationing. By the way, during World War II, supplies of sugar were meager. Consumers shifted to substitutes like honey, molasses, saccharin, and corn syrup. How meager were the supplies? Well, some restaurant patrons took home the sugar bowls on their tables. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. I'm traveling in the western part of the state. We were in Fairview this morning and Macomb during the afternoon, and this evening we'll be in Beardstown and then back home for the night. I'm now on the line with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago. Mark, it looks like everybody, most of them, got a little rain all the way from Champaign through at least the Macomb area. That's from one side of the state to the other. Although there was a great deal of difference in the amounts of rainfall, how did that vary across the whole of the Corn Belt last night and over the weekend?
Yeah, certainly from a rainfall standpoint, it was the key largest corn and soybean producing counties here in the Midwest that received rains over the weekend and late last week. So that included our key counties here in central and northern Illinois, but also into Indiana and even into the northern areas of Iowa and southern Minnesota. Those areas also picked up a significant rainfall. And as we've looked back over the past 30 days and going into this past weekend, you know, some of the driest areas had been the southern half or so of the Midwest, and the vast majority of those dry areas received a significant rainfall here over the weekend.
So did this stretch all the way from the Dakotas to Ohio?
It certainly did. Now, the highest totals, totals in excess of 3 inches over the weekend, extended from southern Minnesota down through central and southern Illinois and Indiana. But that kind of full zoom of 1 to 1 inch plus the totals extended, yeah, all the way back to the Dakotas and all the way through the Ohio River Valley.
Well, it sounds like the Midwest got a good drink. What do temperatures look like and rainfall amounts going forward?
Let's first talk about rainfall, which bottom line is that it still looks on the active side across the Corn Belt over the next couple of weeks. For this week, the main rains look to be primarily Ohio River Valley and then up across the northwestern part of the belt in Minnesota, the Dakotas. Next week, though, it looks like the rainfall totals will be more uniform. But bottom line is that the active conditions will continue here, so there will be more opportunities for further soil moisture improvement. Now, from a temperature standpoint, temperatures did shift in the warmer direction here in the outlook, but still no problematic heat here coming up or nothing that extreme. But temperatures will be biased warmer than normal, especially over the next 10 days. But with this wet pattern, along with the warm but not record heat, that is simply going to promote favorable growing conditions as we approach the first official day of summer, which is coming up here on June 21st.
Can you wrap up for me by taking a look at the rest of the planet very quickly? What are the most troublesome spots that are left?
Yeah, Todd, the biggest trouble spot at this time is Ukraine and Russia. They've been on the drier side and on the warmer side over the past month's time frame, and that pattern looks to continue over the next couple of weeks. So that's impacting kind of late winter wheat development, but probably more significantly is the impact is on corn, which is developing, and certainly something to watch as we go through July when corn will be going through the yield-sensitive pollination stage.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse. I'm Todd Gleason.